Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. So who are you and where'd you come from?
My name is Orla. I'm from Ashburn at the minute, but I kind of grew up everywhere, so we'll get into that.
Tell me, what does that mean, you grew up everywhere?
So I was born in Ireland. We moved to France when I was about two. My two sisters were born there, and then we went back to Ireland, back to France, back to Ireland. I think back to France again, back to Ireland, then to Wales, and then to Ireland.
What took you to France?
My mum's a chef.
Right.
So I think it's kind of that classic, like, French dream of being a chef over there and the food and all this. So, yeah, we moved over there. We found an old run-down place, and my dad's a carpenter, so he had the best time doing up all these houses throughout our lives. And, yeah, just bounced back and forth.
What was it like for you?
The younger years, obviously, I don't remember. Like, it was just go with the flow, I suppose, you know. As I started to understand things better, it got harder, though, like, when it came to moving schools, especially. Moving back to France one of the times was hard, because when I was younger, it's kind of those kids don't care at that age. When you're younger, they just don't care who you are and all this stuff. They just want to play. But then it got to the age of like 8, 9, and I couldn't speak their language, which was a huge issue. So yeah, it really differed. French people, French kids are arseholes.
No offense to the French, but I think that it's like when you go to Paris and you ask a question and they completely ignore you,
but
you go
stereotype
anywhere.
It's a stereotype. In saying that, there was a lot of lovely French people, but the majority weren't the best, and their driving's atrocious.
What about your sisters?
Sisters, they're, oh God, we're all so different.
Really?
So different. So my sisters, there's 18 months between them, and between, so there was myself, Orla, who was born 2001, Freya was born 2004, and Ava was born in 2005. So they're so close in age. So growing up, it was kind of those two together. And I was kind of, I thought I was outcast, but, you know, they were playing Barbies, it was the two of them, it wasn't me. But they are fairly resilient. When we went to France, they made friends very quickly. Freya was very popular in school, like very popular. So when we had to move to Wales, she was heartbroken because she was so settled. But moving to Wales gave Ava a huge amount of confidence because she turned into the popular girl and everyone wanted to know what Ava was doing. Freya made a good group of friends, and it was going great. And then when we came here, again, it was a new group of friends. They did struggle. I think the more we get into this, you'll kind of realise there's a bit of blame as well. And I don't blame them in the slightest. Justified. But now it's, God, they're so different. Like, I'm definitely a home bird. Like, I just want a family, a home to settle down and stay put because of all the travelling. I just want to focus on that. Freya is travel, vibey, crystals, this kind of crazy, doesn't care kind of person. And Ava is a classic, like, girlo, like the tan, the dresses. You know, she's actually in college at the minute, horse college, so she loves her horses, and she just wants to find a farmer and ride horses all day. So it's very, very different people now, but we get on.
So tell me then about coming home and what that was like for you.
There's your ritual.
There's me done. I said that, didn't I? That it's on every podcast. I don't understand why he goes out and comes back in every time, but go on, tell me.
The last... the earliest that I can remember when we came back, I remember driving, and I recognised Ashburn, and I was so surprised I did, and I don't know why to this day I recognised Ashburn, but I knew we were home. The furthest I can remember was actually being in France,
mm-hmm.
Before all this happened. I don't remember being in Ireland before that. I do. Sorry, this happens a lot when I'm thinking about it. So I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. Let me go back. Let me think. Talentstown. We were living in Talentstown. I believe this is the earliest I can think of. We were living in Talentstown in a lovely estate. I was in school and it was great. My sisters were in a play school and we had a great, we had a great family life here. It was absolutely brilliant. It was just classic. Like you think of a stereotypical 5-person family. It was brilliant. Mm. Like, do you know, I don't remember anything past school and in the estate. And I remember the friends I had at the time. I had this friend called Lauren. She was brilliant. I actually found her a few years ago and got back in touch. But anyway, so that was good. I don't remember going back to France after that one. But I remember coming back home the second time. And we were living in the country. And there we were in this country house, this old country house. And I remember where there was a bull in the field next to us. And Mam used to be terrified of us going out onto the trampoline. She was like, there's a bull, the bull's out. You can't go with the bull's out. It was a big thing.
Yeah.
This bloody bull. And yet again, it was same thing, just classic 5-person family living their lives. When we went back to France that time, I remember we went, Mam had us in, and I know this sounds very long, we went to private school, which is nothing wrong, but I was in, I would have been about 7 or 8 at that point, and I remember going into the classroom, and I held onto this teddy that I used to have for dear life. I was so scared, and Mam sat me down in the classroom, and it was all these, this was a big classroom, there was 2 different classes in this one classroom, like it was insane. But Mam sat me down and she left, and when she left, this teacher spoke somewhat English, because I didn't have any French at this point. Mm-hmm. She had a little bit of English, so she, I clung to that teacher, like she was my mam for that day. Yeah. And the girls were in the play school, in that school as well. And yeah, it kind of got to the point of like, I have to learn the language now, I have to get on with this and whatever else. So got a hold of the language. But as that was happening, because I didn't have such fluent French at the time, kids really seen that as an opportunity. And they used to say things, and I'd be like, what? And they just used to laugh. And I'd be like, I was so confused. They just used to laugh in my face. Eventually, when I did get the language, I think people saw me as an easy target anyway. At that point, it was too late kind of a thing. So when I did get the language and I could understand what they were saying, it was just brutal. There was when I went into the next class up, because that's kind of when I became fluent, when I got back to the fluentness of it, there was 3 people in particular, a girl called Chloe, a girl called Zilly, and a boy named Hugo, and they were arseholes. They used to just, it was just constant name calling, really really mean stuff. At one point, this Hugo boy said something horrible to me. And I went home and told Mam, and she went to the teacher and said, you need to move him, because we used to be sat next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very easy target. Used to be sat next to each other. So she moved us. And about 3-4 weeks later, she moved us back together in the same table. And he stabbed my hand with a sharpened pencil. And I had that mark there for like 3 weeks, and the teacher just didn't do anything. Zilly was horrible. She was just evil. Don't know what she's like nowadays, but at the time she was evil. One day I got up for school and I faked being sick, and it was the first time I'd ever faked being sick. And I think that was kind of like, Mam was like, oh God, no, this is not normal. Like, you're not going back to that school. So we went to the school that morning, and Mam went up to the head teacher. She's like, Orla's leaving, she's not coming back. And she didn't care. She could not care less. And I would have, and even looking back, I'm like, Mam's paying a lot of money for me to be here. You would think they'd want a bit more, you know, to help us a bit more. But no, anyway, so we left and I went to the local public school. And shit hit the fucking fan. It was so much worse. I met a girl called Anissa, was her name. And it was just another, like, she just saw me as an easy target all over again. My mum and I used to go and walk the dog. My mum and my sisters, we used to go walk the dog through the town and we'd end up on this, like, trail. And I used to rollerblade doing this, and I love rollerblading. But Anissa would be waiting outside her house on rollerblades. But, like, I would have never told her that we're walking. She'd just be waiting for us to be there, and then she'd come with us. Which mum just thought was, you know, cute. You know, she's just waiting for a friend or whatever. At first it was just a normal friendship. And then it was kind of like, it started to become a thing of, like, she'd talk to me when the better people weren't around. Which was just, it was just horrible. She started calling me names, you know, insults, whatever. She would push me into, like, trees. She'd pull my hair. That was a classic for her. If I said no to something or if she didn't like something, she'd just grab my hair and just yank it, which was just not fun. So all this happened. This was all going on for a long period of time. Mum kept saying to me, you know, stay away from her. She's rotten. Just stay away. But I didn't have anybody else. You know, everyone else in the school did not like me for whatever reason. Looking back again, I tried to look back. I'm like, did I do something? You know, did I say something or whatever? And I really, really didn't. But Anissa got a boyfriend. And this boyfriend at the time, again, first impressions, great. Mm-hmm. He was lovely. And just so happened he was in my class, because we were in two separate classes of the same year. He was in my class, and one day we got let off break before the other class did. So me and him were in the playground just talking. I couldn't tell you what we were talking about. And I could see Anissa looking out the window and looking at us. She just didn't seem happy. And I was like, oh, shit. I thought my hair was going to get yanked again. Mm. And when she came out, she came out with the really popular girls. Like, and I kind of knew instantly. I was like, oh, get away. Don't even go over there. Just, this is one of her moods. And they all came over to me and just started hurling abuse at me. Like, hurling abuse. Cornered me. Like, literally into a corner. It was kind of at an angle. And they did a semicircle around.
Wow.
I was cornered. Like, couldn't move. Couldn't leave. Again, just hurling abuse. Saying that I was trying to steal her boyfriend or whatever. Shite. And when the bell rang, so I was kind of leaning against the wall because I didn't have anywhere to go. Well, the bell rang. One of the girls came out from the crowd surrounding me and kicked me in the knee and pushed my knee down and couldn't walk. She'd really, really hurt my knee. And went to my teacher. He put me in his car and drove me to our house. He literally opened the door, let me out and left. Didn't explain to my parents what had happened. I think my parents just came out because they were like, what is going on? Didn't explain anything that had happened. Didn't explain that I'd been hurt. Just drove off. That was it. Nothing. And he knew what had happened. Mm. So I went to hospital. I was in a brace on crutches for 2 or 3 weeks, I believe. Nothing was ever done. No questions were ever asked. Those kids weren't spoken to. I mean, nothing. And mum was obviously like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. how is that okay to let these kids away with this? And as much as she tried to get them to, you know, have a word with these kids, there was nothing. So, but life carried on. And I just, again, I got back to being friends with Anissa because that was the pattern. The next, like, major thing that I can remember was swimming lessons started. And so we used to walk down to the swimming pool, put this public swimming pool as a group, because it was about a 10-minute walk, and that was fine, got there. Mam came with us on our first ever trip, because I'd never been swimming before, and I was really like, oh, shit. Mam was one of the parents accompanying, and she was trying to get me in really hard, and I wouldn't go in, and she turned her head for a minute and just jumped in, went for it, and she was so happy. She was so like, well done. Like, I felt amazing. So the next time we went swimming, just got straight in there, having the time of my life. We had a coach as well who was teaching us stuff, and then we got a free kind of 10 minutes at the end to play. So as I was playing in the lower end, I was kind of sat down in the water because it was obviously very shallow, and Anissa was talking to one of the boys in the class who was what would be known as kind of a nerd, like no one really spoke to him. And then all of a sudden she started speaking to him. I remember looking over thinking, oh, that's weird, and ignored it. And then she was talking to him, laughing, just carried on ignoring, just playing someone else, can't remember. And next thing you know, he jumps in on top of me, on top of my leg. I guess he was in braces and crutches again. It was just, oh, and I know looking back, like even I can see her face and her kind of looking at me, and I was like, oh, okay, I know like she did ask him to like jump in on top of me. I can't assume that she knew what the consequence of that would be, but anyway, I was in brace and crutches for a bit more. The next big thing was we went skiing. Went in France.
Yeah.
Go skiing.
Yeah.
So we all went skiing as a school trip, and at the time my life, I actually found out I'm really good at skiing.
Good.
Brilliant. It's class.
Great fun.
Oh, it was deadly. And we were having a great time. We did we went to this factory, we got to learn how to make cheese. It was brilliant. The last night we had a disco, it was like a farewell disco. So the plan was we'd have this disco, in the morning we're going skiing, and then at some point late afternoon we'll start heading back. At the disco, I was dancing with Anissa and a few other girls, can't remember, and one of them pushed me, and as they pushed, there was a chair behind me, as they pushed me back onto the chair, Anissa pulled the chair from behind me, and I snapped my wrist.
Oh my God.
I spent the last day with my teacher while they were all off skiing. We had to find a doctor in the mountains, and we ended up in what, honestly, looking back, felt like a house. Like, it was such a strange experience. And when they did an x-ray, it was like severely broken. So I was in a cast for ages. And I remember when they went back to look at my cast, when we got home, they were like, oh yeah, no, like she's not coming out of this for a while. Like, so I can't even remember how long I was in that for.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
That is absolutely terrifying. Yes,
that's three like hospital visits. All caused by this girl. Like, so went home, mum got me off the bus. She's like, what the fuck? What happened here? Obviously she knew like it was broken. I don't think she realised like how broken it was. Then I broke my wrist again in between that, but that was actually my own fault. That time I was rollerblading, surprise, and fell back, but that was broken again, so I've got a very sensitive wrist now. But the next thing, Facebook. That's how we get into this. Facebook was the next thing. Oh, sorry, no. One of the times when I was on crutches and a brace, I was in Anissa's house, and she invited this other girl over who hated me, and I didn't realise she invited this girl over. And they were spraying perfume, like, in my face. Like, just really, like, it was getting in my eyes. And I had to leave. But her bedroom was upstairs, and the stairs down were, like, really narrow. I was on crutches, so I was trying to crutch my way. Like, so, trying to run on crutches, basically, downstairs. And I went flying on my crutch, crushed my arm behind myself, and had to get the fire department out. Like, it was really bad. Really, really bad. Another bad one. I was in a brace, I think. My neck brace from that
And her
one.
Parents... like
oblivious. Oh, she's an angel, absolute angel. She had a mother and a stepdad, and the stepdad kind of just stayed out of her way, kind of thing, you know. It was very, he didn't really know where he stood, but the mother was just oblivious to what she was doing to me. But if she stepped out of line, and I can kind of see where the aggressiveness came from, if she stepped out of line, like, she'd get hit. So I have a little bit of sympathy in that sense, you know. I can see where it stemmed from. But yeah, her parents were oblivious to everything. Like, she was just an angel in regards to everything else in life. So yeah, Facebook. Anissa was on Facebook and was convincing me to make a Facebook account. And this was when Facebook was like brand new to the scene. Like, I don't even think there was an app for it yet. Like, it was just, you went online and searched Facebook. So she was convincing me to do it, and I did. I set one up. They had like a computer room in her house. So went into this like little tiny was like a box room with the computer in it, everyone used it, and set up this account. When I was doing that, obviously she set it up for me, so she saw the password, the email, the whole lot. And it was fine for the first, but I was posting pictures of lollipops and thinking I was really like cool and Converse, that kind of a era. And she at some point obviously went in and messaged everyone I knew saying horrible things, all my friends list, so obviously these people saw that it was me when it wasn't, and started posting things from my page saying horrible things about myself, if you know what I mean.
Like what?
Fat, ugly, hate certain people, should be tagging people, just horrible things. So I never got that account back, so I had to make up a new one. And when I did, I decided to go looking online for friends, seeing as real life was going so well for me. And in France, there was a big thing of like, you join these groups where a lot of different teenagers are on. So it's Les Squats des Ados, so it's like the squatting area for teenagers. So you'd post in, you might post a picture of yourself and say, you know, your age, your name, and want to have a chat, basically. And most of the conversations I got from that were genuine, like kids just look bored online at night and just want to have a chat. I made one lad who stuck around, he was a friend, and I got on really well with him, actually. So yeah, I thought, oh, these groups are great, they're really friendly, you know. And then I made a post one day, and an account messaged me claiming to be another young male teenager, just wanted to have a chat, which turned into kind of a relationship, I suppose. Looking back, it was kind of like borderline, like girlfriend, boyfriend kind of a thing. Very genuine chats. He'd message me every day asking how I am, you know, what's going on in life. And he seemed to be the only person that really cared, obviously bare my family. And we were talking for a few weeks, borderline months. Then he asked me for some naked photos. And I said no. I said no multiple times. And he insisted, and he said, look, if you don't send me them, basically, I'm disappearing. And I thought, shit, well, you're the only person that really cares about me right now. So go on then. And sent pictures. And from that point on, the minute I sent the pictures, it was kind of, oh, you look great, thank you. And I was like, this is never happening again. Don't ask ever again. He's like, yeah, no problem. Like, you look amazing. You're gorgeous, this, that, and the other. And then it was like the next day or so, could have been 2 or 3 days, I got a message from a different account saying that, so the original account's name was Stephen Nito. And when I got a different account, which was like a similar name to it though, saying that it was Stephen's brother. And when I seen the name, I was like, oh, maybe it is, because it sounds, you know, similar enough.
How old were you?
That point I was, when we first started talking, I was like going on 11. This could have been, it's a bit of a blur, like fresh 11, like brand new 11-year-old. So.
The brother.
Yeah, the brother. So he texted me saying that Stephen had passed away. And that he's been on Stephen's account and he's seen all the pictures, the 2 or 3 pictures, whatever it was, full body. And he said he's seen them. And if I don't send him more, he's going to post them everywhere and post them to my family and whatever else. Shit. Fuck. And I knew it was wrong. I'd been told so many times by my mom, you know, the classic, well, all mothers tell their kids, don't speak to strangers online. Don't do it. Don't. The nagging. Isn't that what it is?
How did you feel when you were told that he passed away? Was that a concern for you, or was it just immediate, the photos?
It was all in one message, so I think subconsciously I kind of twigged what was going on. I didn't really feel a lot, though. No one's ever actually asked me that. I don't think I felt, like, sad about it. I do think subconsciously I kind of knew what was going on, so...
You just felt, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. It was. I basically ignored that this... other lad was dead. And I just was like, oh, shit. So, yeah, I spent 2.5-3 years just at his mercy, doing whatever he wanted. So in those 3 years, it was videos, pictures, Skype calls. It moved on to Snapchat as well, because obviously Snapchat all disappears, so there's no evidence.
Okay, right, let's take a cup of tea, because yeah. I've made a cup of tea and you haven't even drank it. And we're always really conscious of that.
It's a lot.
So he comes on, so we break this in. So he comes on and he says, I want this. So then you're in trouble, so you start then getting more and deeper and deeper and deeper in trouble. With this situation, and it went on for 3 years.
2.5 to 3 years, yeah.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about what was going on?
No problem. So, it was just, pictures, videos, it was Skype calls. So, with the Skype calls, it was the strangest thing. He would obviously have me on the video, doing what he wanted. And he would just be sat there in the camera, like, it was a pink wall, like salmon kind of pink, but the lights wouldn't be on. It would just be the light off the computer. The light off the computer, and he'd just be lying there in bed, just watching. And he'd just be staring.
Could you see his face?
Yeah. Oh, that is embedded. He had these strange, like, really rectangular black glasses, and his lips. I will never forget his lips. There's a name for these lips, and I seen it once on Facebook what the name was, and then I forgot about the name. But he had such specific lips. He just stayed
fancy. How old was he?
He claimed to be around my age. Looking back, at the time, maybe he was an adult, like, definitely an adult, like, at least 20. At least. Could have been mid-20s, to be honest. One time, the door opened. Someone opened his door on his end. And I remember him fucking the computer over very quickly. And then, like, I was kind of like, oh, okay. Maybe he's been caught. Mm. And 30 seconds later, he turned it back over. Because he never spoke. It was, he live texted on Skype. And he just told me to carry on. And that was it. And I was like, who was that? No one, don't worry about it. Okay, that was it.
And when you're doing all these and having these calls, is this a home in your house in France?
Yeah. So the house in France was an old house. It was like, I couldn't tell you the year, but it was old. Mm. And the door handles were the old, very old-fashioned door handles, where it was, they were two kind of porcelain round twist knobs. Yeah. Mm. And in the middle, it was just a square bar. And a pin holding them together. Mm. I'd learned how to take that pin out so I could take the door handle off. I literally dismantled the door handle so that no one could come into the room, but I could close it and open it as I pleased from the inside. And Mam would keep fixing this door handle, thinking, God, this keeps breaking. She kept fixing it and kept breaking. And that was kind of Mam's kind of red flag as well. She was like, how does this keep breaking all the time? And she eventually realised I was doing it. Took a while, but yeah. So I was at home. I had a bed, a bunk bed with the desks underneath. Those really cool ones at the time. And yeah, just again, did anything and everything. So the Skype calls weren't too often. Like, I'd say maybe once every fortnight. But Snapchat was every day. Every single
day. Tell me about that.
I would wake up every day to like a text, and it'd be multiple times throughout the day of like, take this picture or do this video or whatever, which way you wanted it. I'd just do it, and then it was so, I became so numb to it, where it was like, oh yeah, it was like brushing my teeth. It was just like, yeah, no bother. And then I just put the phone down and get on with my day, and it was literally just like brushing your teeth in the morning. And then sometimes it'd be throughout the day. If it was weekend and I wasn't in school, he was very aware of that and asked me multiple times throughout that. If I was in school, he wouldn't really bother me too much. And I used to lie to him saying that I was spending time with my family, or like we're watching a movie or something. Even if I said that, he'd be like, go to the bathroom. Like, he'd come up with an answer to everything so quickly.
And the threats were always there, were they?
Yeah. So at one point, I was like, how real can this be? You know, and for some reason, I never decided to go onto his account. I never looked at his Facebook page. And when I did, the first image, which was very recent, was a woman fully exposed. And he had tagged people. And I looked at the tagged people. They all had the same last name. It was all her family. He had tagged all her family in it. And she was exposed. And I thought, oh, fuck, he's not joking. Like, he's serious. And that just put the fear of God into me. Like, I hid everything so well. And I did hide it so well, even looking back, because no one realised for 2.5 to 3 years. During that time, I started to self-harm. I became very cold. I was a nightmare child. I started to not wash. Like, I'd refuse to take a shower. I go around greasy hair. Like, my personal hygiene was disgusting. And
do you think you were doing that to, like, make yourself unattractive to him, maybe? Or
I honestly don't know. I can't even tell you about the psychology behind it. Like, I used to be known in the family as the soap dodger. Like, my granny and grand, like, my grandparents called me a soap dodger because it was a thing that I just wouldn't take care of myself. My room was a mess all the time. I was a nightmare at home. My parents didn't know what to do with me. Like, they were at a loss. They didn't know what was going on. They thought it was just the bullying, because the bullying was still going on as well behind all of this. So they just thought it was that and put it all down to that, and they didn't know what to do because obviously the French teachers weren't helping. So from their perspective, they were trapped because it was all the bullying, when in reality, obviously, there was other things going on literally behind a locked door. I was very protective. At one point, I got a phone, and the protectiveness over that phone, my God. I would delete the app if anyone ever tried to, like, go on my phone. I had it passcode. No one was ever allowed to know the passcode. Yeah, it was just an absolute, it was just, looking back, I was actually quite smart in how I went about it.
And I think most people are, because I think they have to be, because they're so terrorised that they just don't want this.
All I think was, if my man sees this, like, what is she going to think of me? Mm. I was so embarrassed and just terrified of what would happen. So I also started smoking, hanging around with very much so the wrong crowd. I remember one time me and my sister were having an argument or something. She grabbed my phone and I went ballistic. I jumped, there was like a courtyard outside one of our windows. I jumped through the window to get to her, tackled her, like, screamed and shouted and, like, crying as I'm screaming. Terror, absolute terror. Got a new phone at one point, and whatever happened, something went on, and Dad again blamed it on the phone. So he picked up my phone, he smashed it on the floor, threw it. He was so frustrated and angry, not at me, but at the situation, and he smashed my phone on the floor, and I bawled. I was, like, inconsolable, because I was like, what? Like, how am I going to have him here? Because although I had my laptop, that was good for when I'm at home, but if I don't respond, I get the threats. So terror. So I managed to convince, I was very manipulative at the time, and I managed to manipulate my mum to get me a new phone within 2 days, which was great. just horrible.
Isn't that incredible that you do kind of then, like, become so manipulative to get the phone to be able to make contact with him, because the terror. And this is what something we have to be really clear about as well. This didn't start on a mobile phone. No. This started on a laptop. And that's where it came from.
It's not always phones. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like people give their kids iPads nowadays. You might think you have all these, because I had locks on the phone. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I should probably say that my mom did put parental locks on the computer that I got, because I told her, again, manipulation, got a laptop out of it. I told her, you know, I need it for homework and all this shite. I was going on about it for ages. But she put parental locks on it and I got them all off, you know. I think kids nowadays are so much smarter than that when it comes to technology. Like, it's not that hard. You know, when you hand a child a tablet from the age of two or three just so they can watch kids' YouTube, you're also handing them a learning tool of how to learn to go around these things and how to use a tablet and where the app store is on that tablet and where's all these different things and where's the settings. And then they end up going through the settings and figuring things out. You know, it's just, kids are too smart for their own good.
And that's really scary because that is like exactly that. We do show them at the settings. Mm-hmm. We do show them. Yeah. Oh, how do I get on the Wi-Fi? And they go straight into settings and pick.
When kids want these games online or whatever it is, or
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want to buy a song on their iPad or whatever, when you put in that code, because you know you have to put in a code or a password, a lot of parents just do it in front of the kid, or they just tell them because they can't be arsed doing it right now, so they just tell them the passcode. You've just given that child the password to taken off all parental controls, and they don't even have to try, they just put in the password now. You've just given them that, so you're contradicting what you're trying to do. And even with the apps, I don't think parents look into any apps enough. You know, there's Roblox, isn't it? I think,
yes,
something like that. One of those games for the kids play. You can chat to anyone online. You know, there's obviously men on there, or you know, women, not all men, that are not on there to play games. They're on there to find these young kids. I think there's a lot more homework that needs to go into how apps function and who has access to them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same with these cameras that you have in homes. As much as they are great and they're very handy to have, there are so many videos online of those cameras being hacked and finding out that kids have been being watched for weeks on end. So, you know, I think definitely a lot more homework needs to be done on things before you hand your child a device and teach them how to use it.
Yeah. And, you know, Paul's IT. Like, Paul is IT, and Amelia has Instagram. Amelia's 13, and she's Instagram and she's Snapchat. And we found out that she had 5 Instagram accounts. And she'd 4 Snapchat accounts. And Paul is like IT, and like, we've shut it down. His Snapchat is not our favourite, but my nieces are. So they were like watching it. And when we did a challenge one day, we were here over Christmas having dinner, and my niece said to her, "Give me your phone." And she went into her Snapchat to have a look, like spot check on it. And she's like, "Why can't I see you?" And Amelia started laughing. And she was like, "I have yous all blocked." She's like, "I have..." And she was like, and my niece, like, she's 20-odd, and she was like, "What?" She's like, "You have me blocked." And she's like, "I have you all blocked." And Paul and I were sitting here like, yeah, when he's found it funny and taught, you know, very clever. But me and Paul were sitting here going, what the fuck?
Why do you need me blocked?
Yeah. And I was like, do not do that. Like, I was like, we're not on Snapchat, and she is. And she my niece watches her now. But I was like, Jesus Christ, why? Like, and like, again, I know sometimes we can say we're not clued in. Paul is totally clued into IT, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're still in that situation. We still found ourselves in that situation, which is scary. So then talk to me then about the next step. So at what point does your mum and dad realise this is going on?
So while this is going on, I was self-harming. And they brought me to a psychiatrist who immediately, when she found out that I was self-harming and I was cutting myself, she said, you need to bring her to hospital today. Like, today, she needs to be admitted. And mum and dad were like, I thought this was like just a regular session kind of a thing. Mm. They, you know, it was the first time going to anything like this. And they just thought it was a regular standard session. And they were, mum was like, do you mean I have to bring her? She's like, you need to bring her in now. So she brought me to hospital and they put me in the psychiatric ward. And I was there, I think, for a week or two while they were assessing me. And the doctor they gave me was the most useless man. Even looking back, I don't know how he ever got any kind of a qualification. He was useless. And he just sit there. He wouldn't even ask questions. So I was very quickly admitted. I was very quickly... What's that word? Discharged.
Discharged. There you go.
I was very quickly discharged, and I actually made friends on the ward as well. Like, you know, there was in France, obviously, I think it's started up again. Everyone smokes. There was a smoking area for us all at 11 years of age. 12, maybe. I might have been 12 at that point. But yeah, there was a smoking area. So we all used to go out and smoke and thought it was great. We were given a lighter as well on a psychiatric ward. Oh, and we still had our phones as well. That's probably very important. We were all still allowed our phones in a psychiatric unit. And there was a school, which was good. But anyway, I was very quickly discharged and basically just told to go home and ride out kind of a thing. I don't know what my parents were told from their point of view. I've actually never asked. So that was fine. Then it just carries on. Obviously, nothing has changed. It carries on. It was happening in the hospital as well. Like, when I say every day, I remember my birthday, I remember Christmas days being told to go. And so it was happening in the hospital, and went home, carried on again, told to go to hospital, did it all again. That was fine. Then the third time it got very severe, and I got to a point of like breaking point. Like, I was really like very done with all this. I couldn't take it anymore. You know, besides being awful to my family and in the house, like, I was a nightmare. What I was doing to myself was just horrible. Like, you know, your biology at that age isn't made for a lot, and I was being made to do a lot to it. So it was brutal, brutal. So I went and, sorry, never got lost me the train of thought there. Yeah, so it was getting a lot, and my parents, this was Christmas, can't remember the year.
That's okay.
But I was freshly 13, because on my 13th birthday, my mum got me some really cool highlighter pink Air Forces, which were just sick. Air Max, sorry, they were really in at the time. So it was that Christmas, I was fresh 13. No, it was actually 3 months, 13, sorry. We were invited up to my dad's friend's house, who lived in France as well, for New Year's. So this friend, dad grew up with him in Ashburn. They've been friends forever. And he actually worked for Interpol, specifically in kind of paedophile area, which was just... mad. I know. But during this time, they'd actually been speaking to him, and I didn't know this. They were actually speaking to him, kind of being like, you know, like, what's going on? And he did try to tell them, you know, take the phone away, like, take all the... And I was, again, manipulative, psychopathic at the time. I wasn't allowing anything like that to happen. I give them a harder time without my stuff, for obvious reasons now. So when we went to New Year's, his house was very structured. the Wi-Fi, he had it set up that the Wi-Fi would turn off at a certain time. So whether they had their phones or not, they weren't online. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was very little you could do on a phone without being online. Mm-hmm. I know now you have all these apps that you can play without it, but at the time you couldn't really. And it would turn back on at a certain time. And he had a computer that was on the hall, so anyone who walked up the stairs could see exactly what you were doing. And it was very, everything was out and open. So we got there and we had a great time. Obviously, again, during all of this, it was still going on. And so what I now know is he actually told my parents when they arrived, I'm going to keep an eye on her for the next few days. I'm going to see what she's like and we'll talk about it after. So that's what they did. We carried on. And meanwhile, he was watching me this whole time and kind of trying to suss me out. On the last day, my parents asked, or Mick is the family friend who worked for Interpol at the time. Mick asked his wife to take all the kids down to the village, to the bakery. And that's what she did. And Mick sat me down with my parents and pulled up his computer of a video, a young Canadian girl called Amanda Todd. And she was a girl who went through something very, very similar to what was going on to me at the time. And she was the first person I ever heard of even getting anywhere close to like what I was going through. Now, sadly, she took her life. She committed suicide. Quite stupid. I think she was 15 at the time. But when I seen this video, the whole time I was sat on the table like that and I was watching it, and Mom and Dad were like, Orla, watch it. Like, you're not even watching it. And Mick was like, oh, no, she is. And he could see it in my eyes, like, I was watching that. And he turned around. He said something to me. I can't remember what it was. Oh, yeah, he did. He said to me, this will happen to you. No, this is happening to you. This is happening to you right now. And Mom and Dad were like, what? What do you mean? And then he said very quickly, he was like, or it can happen. It will happen. As in a future tense. And I was like, okay, he doesn't know. He doesn't know. So that hit me. It really hit home. I went home. We all went home and Mam was unpacking the bags from being away. Dad went to golf and Mam had asked me to clean my room. Because tip as usual. So went to clean the room. As I was cleaning, no, sorry, I never actually ended up cleaning the room. I took the door handle off again. And I locked myself in. Mom tried to get in. She couldn't get in. At this point, she realised that if she uses a pair of scissors, she can work the door open. So me and Mom had a huge argument. And Dad came home and Mom told him to take the door off my bedroom. So he literally took the door off the hinges and walked away with it. And I was in hysterics. So that was just another thing of like, after having like a 20-minute argument with my mother, clearly, you know, this is, I'm not the only person that's gone through this. And in my head, it was like, well, she killed herself. Maybe that's how I go about this. So I had an ensuite at the time. I went into the ensuite. I took a lot of medication. I'd been collecting medication at the time. Took a lot of pills and cut my wrists again. When I cut my wrist this time, I actually went a lot deeper than ever before. And I kind of scared myself. Blood was literally dripping off my fingers into the sink. And I screamed. And when I screamed, my sister was the first person to walk in and see me like that. So Mam grabbed me, got me downstairs to the kitchen, wrapped me up, packed a bag, and started heading to the hospital again. She said to me on the way to the hospital, if you don't tell me what's really going on, we're not taking you. You are staying here. Like, I'm not taking you out until you tell us what's going on. So I just looked at her and I just said, Amanda Todd. And she's like everything just clicked for her. The bomb had dropped. Like, it was a big realization for her. And she pulled over. I was in hysterics. She was in hysterics, just comforting me, saying, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. I told her I took a lot of medication. And she was like, get back in the fucking car. You know, we need to get to the hospital. So I was in hospital, I was admitted, I was on a drip and all this stuff, just keeping, I think got sick as well, threw them all up anyway. Mom, the first like 24 hours was like making sure that I was okay, because obviously what I'd done. then I was put back onto the psychiatric unit for the third or fourth time. And she had told them what had been going on, what was really going on. And this stupid, because every time I got the same doctor, because obviously he worked with me, he was just so stupid. I don't even think he asked me about it. I can't even remember. But if he did, it was like really stupid questions, like obvious answers kind of questions. Mum was trying to go to the guards, and she was told by somebody in the hospital there was an interview room in the hospital. Because obviously they wanted this to be like as fresh as possible. There was an interview room in the hospital where I can go down with my mum and the guards will come and do an interview here. So that was what mum wanted to do. Then like the next day she was told, no, there's no such room here. Like, right, okay. She was told to drive to another city with me to go and see a specialised unit thing. When we got there, it was like the most back alley place, like so sketchy. I probably was like, hardly this is like, you know, a police centre. And went in and we were met by this female like guard person and a male, and they pulled us into a room and were kind of like, you know, taking account of what happened. I told them what had been going on. They looked up his page there and then on Facebook. They had this anonymous page that they could do this type of stuff. They went onto his page, and when we went through the friends list, not one male on his friends list. They were all young girls. And I was like, shit, never even looked at that either. They never took our names, our numbers, nothing. They told me that I would have to meet up with him, this Stephen lad. I'd have to meet up with him if they ever want to catch him. I was like, am I really hearing this? Like, is this what's actually being said right now? So went back to hospital. Mom kind of realised at that point, oh, sorry, she was told she has to go through the proper channels and make a police report in our local town, in our own, it's like, it was a village. Mom was like, I really don't want to do that because everyone knows everyone in this place. And Mom owned a business in the village at the time. It was a very popular business, so talk of the town kind of a thing. And, you know, we didn't know what we were doing at this point. So it was kind of like, how long is this going to affect us long term? So she was told you have to do it. Otherwise, this isn't going to work. So she went and done that. And when she did, she ran into that Hugo lad, that young boy, him and his mother making a police report about bullying. Mum lost it. And this is France as well. Mum hasn't got very good French, so she lost it in this broken French. I just went ballistic and was like, this is all your fault. You know, whatever. The local guard came. I was discharged somewhere along the line. The local guard came to our house to do a report. And he told me that it was basically my fault. Like he practically said the words, it's your fault. Mom went... Mom went ballistic and said, kind of ranted at him and went mad. And eventually he apologised for blaming me. Then this is where it becomes everything. This all happened within like 5 days. Mom, in the meantime, was in contact with people in Wales trying to figure out how to move us. Within 5 days, we shut down her very successful business in France, packed up the house and ran. We literally left the country and ran. She picked me up from the hospital. We went home to finish up packing our stuff, took the ferry, and we were in Wales the next day. I don't even think it was 5 days that this all went on. Because she realised very quickly she wasn't getting any help here. Like, that was not going to happen. So went to Wales and got in touch with social services over there, I believe it was, because needed help. We needed to get me better. We needed to hopefully find some legal advice and whatever else. And social services put me and my sisters on an at-risk list and blamed my parents. And we had to go to court, like this little court meeting thing. The first judge was head of this thing. I don't know, it's not even judge. I don't know who she was, but she, the first one, decided to keep us on it when we went to this meeting. And the second one said, why are they even on this? This is ridiculous. She was like, she couldn't understand how we'd even been put on there in the first place.
And isn't this, like, again, the initial thing, and I know this was France and Wales, and we'll talk about everything else. The initial thing you want to do is report it, get help. And I do see sometimes on social media people say, oh, be careful because of Tusla, and be careful, your kids will be taken off, you're careful this. And these are horrific things.
Blame.
Yeah, it shouldn't happen. Like, the blame should be only on the perpetrator, and that's it, and nobody else. Because you have got that fear of going, if I report this, and it's also with, I think, a lot of sexual violence cases or a sexual assault or all those cases, that we're just afraid to report it because what if, you know, my child gets taken off me?
What if it backfires?
Yeah, exactly. What if it backfires? It's so scary.
It is. It's terrifying. And, you know, at the time we were scared. You know, we didn't know. We knew we were on this list, but we didn't realise. We didn't know what could happen. We didn't know if this, because we had absolutely, like, crazy social worker who used to come by the house, like, she was insane, very disrespectful woman, and she used to come over, and like, I kind of just kept thinking, like, any minute now she's gonna turn and be like, well, you can't stay here, do you know. It was scary. But anyway, this second person decided to say, what are you at, this doesn't need to be happening, goodbye, best of luck to you. That was that. We got in touch with CAMHS over there and a few other mental health services, and basically got hit with a wall there as well. When I went to CAMHS, I made a connection with one lady who was so good, and made a connection with her, and I was very happy talking to her. I was very comfortable talking to her. In the meantime, I had started self-harming again, and when I told my mum I had been, she obviously told CAMHS again, which knocked me up to this other level, kind of, to a place called KIT. It's like a step above CAMHS basics, I don't know. And they took that one woman that I liked away from me, and I never saw her again. And I was like, you are joking me. So eventually, during all of this, Mam got us phones again. Because France is so different. Everyone in Wales had like iPhones, and they were all watching Zoella and all these YouTubers, and that wasn't a thing in France. Like, you know, you didn't really care if you had an iPhone or a BlackBerry. You know, if you had an iPhone, great, but whatever. All these kids had like the iPhone 5C. So Mam, we felt very left out. So Mam went and got us phones, and she was very, very strict with me and my phone. And when I downloaded, I think it was Skype, I downloaded with the no intention of ever going back down that road ever again, because it logged me in automatically. And when he saw that I was active, he messaged me. It was like within 2 minutes of that being back, he texted me. And it's like, where have you been? You better come back, you know, send these pictures back and whatever. So I told Mam straight away, reported it, and got rid of Skype altogether. And I think me telling Mam was kind of like, okay, I can trust her again, kind of a thing. And from there, it was kind of, look, my mental health wasn't good. Like, it wasn't what it should be at that age, but it was better. I wasn't suicidal anymore. I was on the odd time self-harming, but it was ups and downs. And made a few friends in Wales, got a bit happy. The girls were very settled. Mam made another business. She likes making business, by the way. Everything was fine. But then back here, my granddad was very unwell, and he was living at home alone in Ashburn, and my dad's siblings were having to stay in the house whenever they could, which was like every weekend they might have somebody there. But what had happened was my granddad had a very serious incident happen, and he needed someone to live with him full time. They were like, well, we're renting here, you know, life could be better, so let's go back. So we moved back to Ireland, which at first was good. Everything was fine. You know, I actually settled in school quite well. So did the girls. We all got our own rooms. Everything was pretty good. Until I got a new phone. And when I got a new phone... Oh, sorry. We were told... we were told by... No, actually, sorry, this happened first, sorry. So got a new phone, again, Skype logged me in to this account, which I thought I'd gotten rid of, and he said he still had everything. And this is years later, this is about 3 years later. He said he still has every image, every video, everything that I sent him, like, on Messenger or Skype. He had everything in a file, apparently, and I was like, fuck you, you cunt. Fuck you. And at this point, I had a bit more balls on me, and I was like, send them then. So I couldn't give a shit, like... Turns out I didn't give a shit, and I actually started shitting my pants and went straight up to tell my mum and went straight to the Garda station, which was 2 minutes up the road. They told me that because it hadn't happened in Ireland, they can't do anything. It's out their jurisdiction. It's, well, it has happened in Ireland. And they were like, what? I said, when we came, because obviously we had family here. So when we came back for holidays, it didn't stop, you know. It kept going. So it has, parts of it did happen. And they're like, okay, right. But because of how little happened, basically I can report it, but it would sit in a box, is essentially what they said. And my thought was, if that sits in a box in an office, I'm going to be wondering every day, am I getting a call today about that box? Or am I waiting 20 years here? Like, what are we looking at? So I decided not to go down the... Sorry, my nose is so itchy right now.
You're okay.
I decided not to go down that route. When I went home with Mam there, I was like, whatever happened to him? Like, you know, because no one contacted us legally about this. So I rang the police in France, our local station. And I said, did you, like, ever find him? I don't know where he is. They said they kind of tracked him in France. So I originally thought he was from Belgium. They said he was from France. Someone else said he was in Canada. It was just no one could even tell me where he was in the world. Like, is he in France where it happened? Like, surely he can tell me from an IP address quite quickly what's going on. My sister had this mean girl in her class at one point, and this mean girl logged into her account and was saying vile things about my sister to other people. Kind of similar to what happened to me. I said, well, fuck that. And I downloaded an app and found the IP address, no problem. The IP address matched a girl's address who's an absolute bitch, and turned out it was her in the end. So I was like, how can I do that? So I did that in 5 minutes with an app, but you can't, they wouldn't even give me the IP address or anything like that, of any information as to where he was. I didn't know how to find his IP address at the time, because just an absolute disaster. They couldn't tell me where he was. So gone with life. And that was kind of end of that. I went onto Facebook about 2 years later to find out he has a kid. He has a child with a girl. I think he is in France as well. I don't know. I still don't know.
You don't know. And nothing was ever done about him. Nothing. And as you said, his friends list was full of girls. And therefore, you were probably more than likely not his only victim. I'd say he probably could have had hundreds. Oh my God. It is so scary. And again, this did not start with a phone. Yeah. It started with Facebook, with Skype, and absolutely terrorizing. Terrorizing. Yeah. It's terrifying.
Oh, gotcha. Horrible. Really, really scary.
When did you start turning a corner for yourself with your mental health?
When I was in Ireland and I was happier, at some point there I had a bit of a breakdown. I think everything just came too much. It kind of all really hit me. And I decided to try and take my own life again. And Mam put me in a mental institution here. Put me, like, she was advised.
I know.
Sounds really bad. Like, she locked the door behind herself. But it was the best thing that ever happened. It was amazing. The staff were absolutely incredible here. I can't remember the name of it, but I'd love to even just email them and say, thank you, you know, you did a great job. But they were just absolutely incredible. Like, the work that they do is next to none. And they cared, especially the nurses. Like, my God. I made friends in there that I'm still talking to today. You know, brilliant. But when we left, and this is Mam's point a lot, is they didn't tell us what to do next. They didn't say, you know, go see this person or anything like that. So Mam decided to do some real research and get deep into it. And she found this amazing psychiatrist in Ashburn who worked with me for basically a year. And because at this point there was a lot of guilt and self-blaming and a lot of different emotions. And she worked with me for so long. And eventually I got to a point where I was like, okay, great, lovely. Life's good. Everything's fine. But during that time, though, from what had happened, I decided it would be a great idea to go into a few toxic relationships. And I put myself in not so good situations. Yeah, just not great. And then every relationship I've had since that has been a disaster. Like, whether it's verbal abuse, any kind of everything, it was horrible, so toxic, petty relationships that were, yeah, absolute disaster. And then eventually I found my current partner, who I've been with for 4 years. She's amazing. So
yeah. She keeps you happy.
Well, she does.
And isn't it like that with a lot of things? Like, I say Paul saved me. You know, like, because when I had anorexia when I was younger. So, but I didn't think, I went to a psychiatrist. He said, she's too young. What the hell is she doing here? I was expecting a woman to walk in, and that was it. And I was told, basically, just eat. You'd be grand if you just eat, you know.
Easy, isn't it?
Yeah. And for me, it was just like Paul, when I met Paul, Paul's family saved my life. I don't know how, but they did. But now, like, as a 43-year-old woman, I'm very grateful for them. But I've saved myself now. Like, yeah. I'm saved, and I'm still continuing to save myself, because we are resilient because of things that we've put ourselves through, or somebody else has put us through. But it is really interesting to me that, and even if you move on from those, not me and Paul, I stay together, but like, if you move on, it's always that you say, you know what, I just needed that person at that time in my life.
100%.
But also 100%. You've done major work on yourself, and thank God for that.
Yeah. I must have been seeing her like every week for about a year. And she was incredible. The biggest thing for me that I think meant so much to me was, she actually pulled up a picture of a brain, and she was like, see this part, this is what's causing that, and this is a chemical reaction. All these feelings I was having, and, you know, even down to what had happened, she was like, this is your brain, this isn't, you know, you didn't choose to put yourself, you didn't choose to, the years of aftermath, you know, that was all consequentially of your brain telling you to do something you probably shouldn't have done, but... You did.
You're in fight or flight in your brain.
Literally. Yeah. Yeah, a huge fight or flight thing. But she was absolutely amazing, and she helped me through a lot of those. There's a girl in England, my name tattooed on her. Like, I swear to God. Yeah, that's my claim to fame. Yeah. Really.
Why did she do that?
Huh?
Why did she do that? Don't know.
Bloody no. I was texting her for like a week. And she went to a tattoo parlor and got my name tattooed around her collarbone.
Okay.
Yeah. So crazy people, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of bad relationships. And Christmas 2019, I met Erin, and she is just, she absolutely, like, when I met her, I was still in that very toxic relationship mindset. Mm. And the work that girl has done to get me to a point where I'm not just going to shut out and scream, I'm going to sit down and have a conversation about this stuff.
Yeah.
I can look at things now from both sides. Mm-hmm. Whereas before it was like, I became very selfish from what had happened. I became such a selfish person and still a very fight or flight mode. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think in many ways, Erin did save me, but in a lot of other ways I saved myself.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you have to keep that there as well. Yeah. And then how I found you was, I was a Claire Byrne. What was it? It was a news talk. I found you on one of them. You were on the radio.
Oh, I did a few things.
Did a few, yeah. And I was like trying to get you because we were in a situation that we had a 12-year-old. Cause it's gone on a year, I think, is it? I'm trying to grab you down. Probably 6 months I'm trying to get you, am I?
I have no idea.
I think so. And I was just like that. I have a 12-year-old girl and I need to be aware of these things that can happen. But also I think this is so important because so many mammies and daddies out there that really need to see how easy your child can fall into a trap.
the other thing that I found, even, you know, I've done a lot of things now in regards to this, but what I found consistently is a bit of a stereotype of what kind of a family this happens to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, I went to private school. My parents had very successful businesses. We had a gorgeous, we were a beautiful five-person family living beautiful lives at the time, you know. And if you looked at us from the outside, you would think, oh, they're great. Look, they're just, they're great. They're absolutely fab. We were financially comfortable and doing great in life, but it still happened. Whereas I think there's a bit of a stereotype of like neglectful parents. This only happens to people who don't pay attention. Mm. I was told not to do it. I was warned, don't speak to strangers. You know, there's not everyone wants to be your friend. And I still did it, you know. So that's also a huge thing, is don't ever think that'll never happen to my child. You know, my baby's an angel. She listens to me, or he listens to me.
And then for any mammies that are going to sit their child down to listen to this, what do you have a piece of advice for somebody who's asked to take those photos or is gone down that path?
Just tell somebody. You know, I know it's very easy to say, because someone could have said that to me at the time and I never would have, but from somebody who genuinely has been through it and spent years going through it, if I had have told someone from the start, I could have avoided a lot of stuff. You know, if you don't think, if you think your parents are going to kick off, tell your friend's parents, tell a teacher, you know, tell a stranger in the street. You know, no one's going to turn you away for being groomed, you know, because that's what it is. It's being groomed, and you're being manipulated to do these things realistically against your will. So just tell somebody. And if you can't, I honestly don't know. I hate saying that. I really hate saying that. But from the person that has gone through it, even looking back, if I'd have watched me saying that now, I wouldn't have told anybody. Mm. So I never have an answer to that, really. The best thing I can say is tell someone, and if you can't,
yeah,
ring a helpline even. Mm. You know, tell somebody anonymously and work with, because I know there's is a Childline that you can keep ringing back to the same person and stuff. Yeah. So try that maybe.
And on that note, we leave it there, Orla. Thank you so much for doing this, because as I said, it's really important that we tell this story to everybody. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.